Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb, text number 26. Abhis Tri Varnai Paryastair. Buddhi Bedai Kriyod Bhavai. Srupam Atmano Buddhyat. Gandhar Vayum Ivan Vayat. Abhi by these. Sri Varnai, composed of the three modes of nature. Paryastai, completely rejected. Due to not touching the living force. Buddhi, of intelligence. Bedai, the differentiations. Kriya Udbhavai, produced from different activities. Srupam, the constitutional position. Atmanaha, of the self. Budyat, one should understand. Gandhai, by the aromas. Vayum, the air. Eva, exactly like. Anvayat, from close connection. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As one can understand the presence of the air by the aromas it carries, so, under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can understand the living soul by these three divisions of intelligence. These three divisions, however, are not the soul. They are constituted by the three modes and are born of activities. Purport. As Ray explained, there are three states to our existence, namely wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. In all these three states, we have different experiences. Thus, the soul is the observer of these three states. Actually, the activities of the body are not the activities of the soul. The soul is different from the body. Just as aromas are distinct from the material vehicle in which they are carried, the soul is unattached to material activities. This analysis can be considered by a person was fully under the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. This is confirmed by the Vedic injunction, Yasmin Vigyate Sarvam Evam Vigyatam Bhavati. If one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can automatically understand everything else, because of not taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, even great scholars, scientists, philosophers, and religionists are always bewildered. This confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. Yen ye ravindaksha vimukta maninas tvayastad bhavat abhishuddha buddhaya. Even though one may artificially think oneself or think himself liberated from material contamination, if he has not taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, his intelligence is polluted, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 3.42, Indriyani Pranyahur Indriye Vyakpuran Manak Manasastu Parad Budir Yobude Paratastu Saha. Above the senses is the mind, and above the mind is the intelligence. Above the intelligence is the soul. Ultimately, when one's intelligence becomes clear through devotional service, one is situated in Buddhi Yoga. It is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. When devotional service develops and one's intelligence becomes clear, one can use his intelligence to return home back to Godhead. So the text again. Abhis tri Abhistri Varnai Parastyar Buddhi Vedai Kriyodbhavai Srupam Atmano Budhyad Gandhar Vayum Ivanvayat. One can understand the presence of air by the aromas it carries. So, under the guidance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can understand the living soul by these three divisions of intelligence. These three divisions, however, are not the soul. They are constituted of the three modes and are born of activities. Prahlad Maharaj must have had quite some time to speak to his schoolmates, because he's going to speak to them at least 52 verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And more or less, he's going to say the same thing in different ways. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying the same thing over and over again, but he's saying it in different ways. Sarva, Karmani, Manasa, Sanyasyaste, Sukhamvasi, Naiva, Dware, Pare, Dehi, Naiva, Korvan, Nikarya. Sarva, Karmani, Manasa, Sanyasyaste Sukham Vasi. So, Sarva Karmani, that means all activities. Manasa, in the mind. Sarva Karmani Manasa Sanyasyaste, or one who renounces the activities within his mind that he's doing. In other words, we may imagine that I'm doing so many things, and it's not that these things are not going on. The question is, who's actually doing them? Now, sarva karmani manasa, who is ever doing them, at least Krishna is saying, renounce the results of the work that's being done, rather than worrying about what am I going to get out of this. Just like this Bhagavatam class, I heard Ananta is going to reduce my pay for each Bhagavatam class. No, actually, we don't get paid for the Bhagavatam class. But it doesn't mean that one will not become attached to becoming a great orator. I'm saving so many people by my Bhagavatam class. I'm waving my hands, and everyone's waving along with me. So one may become attached also to getting some result from whatever we're doing. We're expecting something in return. People will love me. In the mode of ignorance, we're thinking, I'm going to get something from this. People are going to pay me. And in the mode of passion, I'm going to enjoy something from this. People will glorify me. And the mode of goodness means I'm going to learn something from this. Whatever you learn, it doesn't really matter. Whatever you learn, it won't make any difference to me. But the fact that I'm going to be illuminated, that's what I'm speaking for. And transcendentally, one is thinking that let Krishna's purpose be served by what I'm doing. The result of that, at least, even if we don't get anything else, at least we get freedom from all our anxieties of what the result will be. Freedom from anxiety, which is quite a good advancement in pure devotional service. Of course, more positive than that, is to do something which is actually pleasing to Krishna. That to think that these are all Krishna's eternal servants, let me do something which will help them understand their relation with Krishna. But if I don't understand my relation with Krishna, then how am I going to explain it to anyone else? So it's not exactly what we're doing that's so important. Of course, it is important what we're doing. Just like we come here and we don't set up a ping pong table for the Srimad Bhagavatam class. And teach you how to play ping pong with devotion. See this ball, it's not different from Krishna. And this racket is not different from Krishna. And when you hit the ball, you should hit it in a very loving way, like Krishna. No, it does make a difference what we're doing. So the activity should be according to what our acharyas have told us. But that's not sufficient. It also has to be done in the right consciousness in order to please Krishna, doing it in a way. And Krishna is pleased by our desire to please him. And his desire to please him is not that just I have this feeling I want to please him, but it should be something practical that's pleasing him. like telling people about him, telling people about themselves, telling them about the process by which they can become aware of Krishna. So if one is doing that, then sarva karma nimanasa sannyasyaste sukhamvasi, then one can live happily in the city of the nine gates. Naiva sarva karma nimanasa sannyasyaste sukhamvasi naiva dware pare dehi. Dware means gates. So this body is just like a city, and there are gates. Just like in a gate. So these gates are a little different. They're very creative. We have our nose, which is two gates. We have our eyes, which are gates. We have our ears, and we have gates. And we have other gates, too. And these all enter into the body. And especially naiva dware pare dehi. But they, in another sense, we have gates which were our consciousness. We are, what we're observing, what we're experiencing, enters into our consciousness through these gates, like the eyes, the ears, the smell, and other things. Touch. Naiva dware pare de naiva koravan nakaryan. One doesn't try to do anything outside of Krishna's service, and even if it's in Krishna's service, one realizes that I'm just, or understands that I'm simply doing this. Well, I'm not doing it. Krishna's doing it, but I'm an instrument. I'm agreeing that Krishna should do it. That Krishna is supplying me intelligence, what to do, and I'm agreeing to it. And because I agree to it, therefore Krishna carries it out. So therefore it says here, this is all very subtle, but we should try to understand it. In other words, if I think I'm just doing something, I'm just waving my hands, and there's nothing else going on, I'm just doing it mindlessly, or maybe I am doing it mindlessly, who knows? But as we said before, we work not with our bodies, actually, we work with our mind and intelligence. So there has to be some intelligence. If there's no intelligence, we can't do anything. If I don't even have intelligence that this hands are connected to my body, then I won't even bother trying to move them because I don't believe it has any connection with me. Move. Move. Why don't you listen to me? Why are you turning your back to me? So some intelligence has to be there. Some perception has to be there. Otherwise, why will I move my hands? If no one was in this room and I started to move my hands and the camera's catching it, they probably called, you know, for the white people in white coats to come and take me away. So there has to be some reason. So we're working it, usually according to time, place, and circumstance. Our intelligence is giving us some perception of what's going on, and then we have some feeling, and then we have some activities, thinking, feeling, and then we willing. So intelligence in every step of that is overseeing how we're thinking, how we're feeling, and how we're willing. Just like if I thought, oh, he's my enemy, he came here to kill me, that's why he came to the Bhagavatam class. Then, someone might hopefully question my intelligence, how I'm perceiving things. If I keep on putting the book up like this, I'll tell you the Bhagavatam, but I got to keep myself protected here. So our intelligence will tell us what to do also, and what to feel. If my intelligence is convinced that my mind is saying that, you know, that feeling I have of being threatened is absolutely true, it's based upon facts, it's based upon past experience, then of course we're going to act in a certain way. So there's a combination of the workings of the mind and intelligence and whatever we're doing. Now, if our intelligence is in Krishna consciousness, then we'll do something in Krishna consciousness. But if our intelligence is Krishna consciousness, then we'll also, in Krishna consciousness, then we'll also try to feel in Krishna consciousness. In other words, if my intelligence is actually trying to connect itself with Krishna, if I'm seeing things in relationship to Krishna, if I'm acting in relation with Krishna, and if I'm feeling in relationship to Krishna, what will be the result? Does anyone know? Krishna. Well, that's a good guess. Well, what will be the, it's all just, what's, what will be the result?
This.
Maybe. What does everything depend on? What's that? Consciousness. All right. Let me see with my consciousness if I can close that window. It's not working. I see something else going on. I'll give you a hint. It starts with a K. Still haven't gotten it? Anyone want to make a guess? What's that?
Knowledge.
Okay, we'll give you another letter. R. Take a guess. Take a guess. What's that? I can't hear you. Say it loud. That's getting there. Are you embarrassed to say that word? Say it again. Krishna, yes, Krishna. Now, we may do so many things, we may have the perfect, you know, wow, I can't believe how intelligent I am. Unfortunately, everyone else can believe how intelligent I am. But no, I can't believe how intelligent I am. I can't believe how much I'm feeling. Oh, this is just, I feel this love within my heart. I can't believe how nicely I'm doing everything. And Krishna's thinking, boy, this person's really puffed up. I'm not going to reveal myself to him. I might spoil his false ego. Ultimately, it depends. We may do everything perfectly, everything with full intelligence, everything with exactly the right feeling according to our perception of, and Krishna may not reveal himself. So if Krishna doesn't reveal himself, there won't be any spiritual bliss. And therefore, when we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll find so many things which are really quite amazing. We have, for instance, Balavacharya. Balavacharya was actually, he had his own disciple succession. He comes in the Balavacharya. And he was a great scholar and a great devotee. I mean, to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally and serve him personally, it's not an ordinary personality. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and when Rupa Goswami, when Balavacharya was on one side of the river and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, and Rupa Goswami was there, and so was Sanatana Goswami, and Balavacharya wanted to embrace them, and they ran away, because they said, no, we're very impure, please don't touch us, because you're a great Brahmin. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, don't touch them, they're unqualified, you're a great Brahmin, they don't want to contaminate you. But then Balavacharya said, no, you don't understand, I understand, these are great devotees of Krishna. So he was intelligent enough to understand the exalted position of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of the devotees. But when he came to Jagannath Puri to visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he displayed a little bit of his false ego. He came into the assembly of devotees and made certain statements like, I would like to explain to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the meaning of the word Krishna, the meaning of the different names of Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, I only know two names. One of them is Shyamasundara and Yasodhananda. I don't know anything else besides that. So he refused to hear the commentary by Balavacharya. And then Balavacharya made the mistake in saying, actually, my commentary is better than that of Srila Sridhar Swami, the original commentator. Then he had so many contradictions in his commentary. And the devotees asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what do you think about this? And he said, anyone who doesn't accept the Swami, Sridhar Swami, I believe to be a prostitute. So you can't get more insulting in the Vedic culture than that, because Swami, the wife always doesn't usually in the Vedic culture call her husband by his name, she calls him Swami, my master. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying that anyone who doesn't accept Sridhar Swami, his commentary, I consider to be a prostitute. So this put Balabhacharya being directly criticized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead meant that no one in Jagannath Puri wanted to hear Balabhacharya's commentaries. So he was a Brahmin, that's all he did is write commentaries. Take Pushadam and write commentaries. So this is very depressing for Balabhacharya. And the only person who would listen to him, he got Gadadhar Pandit by force, made him listen to it. Gadadhar Pandit didn't know what to do. If he ran away, then he would be insulting a Brahmin. If he stayed there, he'd be insulting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he stayed there and just prayed to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Probably didn't listen to the commentary. In any case, every day Balabhacharya came to the court, to the Association of the Devotees of Jagannath Puri, and put forward all different kinds of arguments and got defeated every time. So then he was becoming more and more depressed, thinking, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was so kind to me when I saw him at my house. I did so much service for him. We discussed about Krishna. And now he seemed to turn against me. And then he realized that actually I'm just puffed up. Just like King Indra, he became puffed up and he thought he was the Lord of everything. And he even tried to defeat Krishna by inundating Vrindavan. But Krishna taught him a lesson. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu realizes that I'm puffed up, that I'm proud of my so-called scholarship. And because of that, he's trying to remove my pride. And I'm taking it as something against me, but as actually Krishna's being merciful to me. So then he went and surrendered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and explained his appreciation for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's attempt to get rid of his false ego. So even when we become greatly learned, even we know perfectly well about the personality of Godhead, still we may not be willing to give up our false ego completely. And therefore we may not be able to relish the actual taste of the holy name and of Krishna consciousness. Even Balacharya, later on he went and he established his own sampradaya, the Balabhacharya sampradaya. So devotional service can become very subtle. And if we think, well, I've conquered my mind, I've conquered my intelligence, I'm connected with Krishna, that may be true to some extent, but we should always be in the mood of being dependent. Therefore, the great devotees, they're always humble. They don't think, I've become a great devotee. Rather, don't try to become a great devotee. Just try to become a devotee. Just try to fix the mind upon Krishna. In spite of these bubbles, as a matter of fact, as I said, we're living in a bubble of illusion where our mind and intelligence is just manufacturing all the time. Just one bubble of illusion is coming out after another. And we're living in it, trying to enjoy it. Trying to feel good in it. Removing all the obstacles from my bubble that make me feel bad, and trying to add all the necessary ingredients to my bubble so I feel comfortable and satisfied and appreciated and loved. Do you love my bubble of illusion? Do you appreciate my bubble of illusion? Are you taking pictures of it to put on Facebook so other people can enter into my bubble of illusion? Please don't pop my bubble of illusion, whatever you do. So one has to recognize these atmosphere of illusion that we're living in, created by our mind and intelligence, and perpetuated by our materialistic activities, in order to serve our mind, the modes of material nature generating from our mind and intelligence, and instead try to become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Try to utilize our intelligence to understand and see things in Krishna consciousness, so we can feel things in Krishna consciousness, so we can work in Krishna consciousness, so that gradually these bubbles of illusion, we won't become attracted to them when they disappear. Oh, you look at this. Maya says, you didn't like my last bubble, but look at this. Isn't that a nice bubble of illusion? Just enter into it. You'll feel so good, you won't believe it. It'll be just, and it's going to go on. I'll throw the same bubble of illusion forever, so you can enjoy it forever. No, I say not, then that, we say, thanks a lot, Maya, keep your bubble. I think I'll try something else for a while. Or we're already in the bubble, we think, well, maybe I should add a little Krishna to this, paint a little sign, Hare Krishna on the bubble. Oh, okay. Then the bubble seems to dissipate. As soon as Krishna comes, Maya seems to dissipate. So the whole idea is somehow or another, in any situation, try to add Krishna to our intelligence, try to see through the eyes of Shastra, try to feel Krishna's presence and his name and his deities and his philosophy. Try to become conscious, feeling, positive. If we chant Hare Krishna, we think, oh, it's impossible. Krishna couldn't be his name. It just couldn't be, you know, I couldn't have wasted so much time chanting so often. Now, why should I even bother to try to listen carefully or even try to feel happy, try to feel Krishna's presence? Try to enter into the sound of the holy name. It just couldn't work. So let me go back with my anxieties and think about all the different things I got to do today and do something productive and, you know, try and get my rounds done so everyone thinks I'm a good devotee. No, it's an opportunity to change our consciousness and use our intelligence, because devotional service, the holy name, is on the most subtle platform of existence. And in order for us to come to that platform, we have to really use our intelligence. And using the intelligence means at least accept, I should just hear, and then I should try to chant in such a way as present to myself a sound that's actually attractive, that should have the same quality that Krishna has. Krishna is joyful, so my sound vibration should also be joyful. And then the result is I'll come a little bit closer to be able to feel Krishna's presence, because my consciousness will become on the same level as Krishna. Unless my consciousness is on the same level of Krishna, then how can I feel Krishna's presence? It's not possible. Unless I'm happy, joyful, attentive, and trying to feel the holy name, then how am I going to feel the presence of the holy name? The holy name is on a different level of existence than the modes of material nature. So unless I can change my consciousness, even temporarily, to another state of existence, then I'll chant Hare Krishna, but I'll be experiencing my bubble of the modes of material nature that I'm currently under. And then it'll simply act as like a covering, so I won't be able to actually hear properly the holy name and appreciate it. So you have to get out of these false coverings and become liberated by simply our changing our environment, changing our understanding, changing our expectations, allowing Krishna to come into our life, allowing that he might exist, and then becoming receptive to him. So we can actually experience Krishna consciousness. Hope that wasn't too subtle, but anyway. We'll stop there. Any questions? Or as Prabhupada said, just to summarize it, the art of Krishna consciousness is the art of focusing one's attention and then giving one's love to Krishna. So if Krishna is actually, Srimati Radharani and Krishna are actually in their holy name, then we should not only hear attentively, but we should hear feelingly, lovingly, appreciatively, trying to experience the atmosphere of the holy name. Okay, thank you very much. Gandharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.